Hello, and welcome to Barks Remarks, the podcast where we talk about the stories from the legendary Carl Barks, creator of Scrooge McDuck and writer and artist of the greatest Donald and Scrooge comics of all time. This episode is a 10-page podcast all about one of his short stories. Get ready to enjoy our remarks.
Welcome back to Barks Remarks. I'm Mark Severino, a grown man who loves duck comics and loves a good holiday-themed story. So today we are going to be recording our obligatory Valentine's Day episode. I was fortunate to be able to record one of these episodes a couple of years ago with a very special guest, none other than my wife, Suzanne Snow Severino. And she has graciously agreed to join me for another Valentine's episode. So welcome to you, Suzanne.
Hi, babe. How are you?
I am great.
Are you ready for Valentine's Day tomorrow?
I am. I'm definitely ready. Always ready. Are you ready?
Not really.
Yeah, we are recording this on Valentine's Eve. We just put our four-year-old to bed finally to have enough time to do this is going to be an episode of the 10-page podcast because we are covering one of Bark's short stories. We get to cover 10 Cent Valentine. And I really appreciate you coming on. I really appreciate you putting up with a couple of years now of this hobby, of this pastime. You've shown a lot of patience and understanding. And, you know, what do you think about this now that I've been doing this, now that I'm a couple of years into it?
I think it's really cool. You have a lot of fun. You know, as I mentioned a couple of years ago, before you did this podcast, I had never read a comic book. Not once, not ever. So yeah. It's expanded my horizons a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't get to do this as much these days where I have someone on who doesn't really have a comic book background. But I do really like to get the perspective of, you know, exposing people to Carl Barks. And, you know, it's perfect having my wife on for Valentine's Day. It's just totally appropriate. And I'm very excited today. We're going to be talking about 10 Cent Valentine, which is a magic and dispel story. So I'm very excited to find out what you think about magic and dispel. Of course, you've read the story we're talking about, but I did have you do a little bit of homework. I did have you read The Midas Touch as well. Let's see, before we get into the actual story itself, really quickly, what is your kind of background and your interest area, hon?
Well, I am an architect. I am also an artist, and I have, unfortunately, many semesters of art history under my belt. And, you know, it's always surprising to me what art history and visual culture kind of bring to all of these stories, and really helps me recognize tropes and notice patterns. Last time, I know this was a couple of years ago now, but last time I was on, I was talking somewhat about how the graphic composition of a lot of these frames feels very familiar. There was a lot of printmaking going on around the same time that Barks was drawing these stories. And, you know, I think I mentioned the printmaker Martin Lewis, who does incredible intaglio prints, absolutely beautiful and very, very valuable intaglio prints, but they're composed almost exactly the same as these comic book graphics. I also think of somebody like Edward Hopper, who is more famous as a fine artist, but who worked as a commercial illustrator before he became known for his paintings. So, you know, I love to see how, you know, the quote high and low share so much kind of DNA.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love to hear your artistic perspective on this. It's neat to make those connections. You know, I've definitely picked up on more of them as I've gone along. I do remember you talking about Edward Hopper. That's when we were, in addition to having you on for Valentine's Day, we did one called My Lucky Valentine. You got to be part of my Christmas story episode you got to come on for Letter to Santa, which is just a really delightful story. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, so let's do this. Let me ask you before we dive into 10 Cent Valentine itself. You got to read a couple of Magica stories now. You probably knew a little bit about her because, of course, you know, being born at the time we are, we both grew up watching DuckTales. So, what were your thoughts on Miss Dispel?
Oh, I think Magica is a ton of fun. As I told you, a few years ago, I, you know, experimented and got my hair cut into bangs. And one of my coworkers at work, who is a bit of a jerk, told me that I looked like Magica Dispel with bangs. So ever since that, I've kind of had a little bit more of a warm heart for Magica Dispel. She's obviously a lot of fun. She's very silly. She's very over the top. You know, the thing, the kind of trope, the fine art trope that I notice the most with Magica, of course, is her styling. You know, the super dark hair on her is very clearly kind of echoing an old art historical trope where, you know, good women, pure and chaste women, virtuous women were depicted with blonde hair and dark hair, which I have, by the way, has for centuries been, you know, it symbolized lustiness and licentiousness, and is also, you know, pretty clearly associated with evil and sorcery. So, you know, that is a bit of an ongoing trope. And you can tell kind of by looking at her that, you know, she's supposed to be bad, right? Like, you can tell just looking at her, she's supposed to be a little bit evil, but she's so funny. Yeah. And, you know, it's hard to see her as a bad character because she's really just a ton of fun. The disguises that she wears are ridiculous, and the whole trek in Midas Touch about going up Vesuvius is just so funny, and I enjoy her.
Yeah, so. I think she's great. You wanted to tell me something about Vesuvius and the real value of Vesuvius. What was that?
So the ancient Romans were among the first to use concrete, and the pozzolans, which are basically the chemical volcanic ash of Vesuvius, is what the Romans used to make all of their concrete, or at least much of their concrete. And it was not really understood by engineers of the time exactly what it was in the volcanic ash from Vesuvius that made concrete work. So, you know, the true kind of treasure of Vesuvius was, you know, those amazing structures that the ancient Romans built that still survive today, like the Pantheon and the aqueducts that you can still go see today. That's all made out of Vesuvian pozzolana.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, you know, the fires of Vesuvius are good for a lot of things.
They're good for many things.
They're good for great concrete. They're good for casting a spell that will make you the richest duchess in the world. You know, you mentioned the black hair. It's definitely obvious what Barks is going for.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of the fact that, like, almost anytime you see anything written about Magica Dispel, she's referred to as the slinky sorcerer.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's just
her coda. It's so funny.
I want to note that the whole thing about blonde hair symbolizing purity, not racist at all. And by that, I mean, it's totally racist.
Well, I mean, what do you think about her, like, being Italian, you know?
Well, given that we are Italian, I always think that's funny. You know, the stereotype, especially of Italian women, is lustiness and, you know, uninhibited sexuality, and obviously, you know, she's playing on all of swarthiness was another one. She's obviously playing on all of those stereotypes.
She's a bit dangerous, right? Like, even before you know what she's up to, she just really exudes danger.
Well, and she obviously, you know, her character design is obviously stands out, you know, dramatically different than any of the other. You know, not that there's a lot of female characters in these, but dramatically different from all of them. So, you know, and the kind of long flowing hair, which is obviously much more human looking than the duck feathers on everybody else. And,
right,
you know, even the duck lips are kind of drawn to be sexy. I don't know how you draw sexy duck lips, but
I always found a way. I always chuckle every time, like, a bit, because there's in any story so far with Magica, just about, there's always the moment where we have to talk a little bit uncomfortably about the fact that she is overtly coded as sexy. And we are talking about this anthropomorphic duck who is clearly supposed to be sexy, but she like is. I'm glad you agree that Magica is just a ton of fun. Most of the fans, you know, she's a fan favorite for like an obvious reason. She just stands out and she's got such dynamite character design.
Oh, for sure.
And then just her name is just fun to say.
Yeah.
And you know, pretty weird that DuckTales made her Eastern European, right? With the legendary June Foray voicing her.
But... also not racist.
Right. The more exotic you can make her, the better, you know.
Well, and you know, there's been a lot of stereotypes too about, you know, Eastern European women and their sexuality and intelligence as well. And so, you know, all of those stereotypes, you know, I will say this, these comics are a product of their time, and they absolutely have some of the prejudices. And
excellent. Well, that's some really good background. Let's do it. We're going to dive in and we're going to kind of summarize what happens in 10 Cent Valentine. I will note really quickly that this story came out first in Walt Disney's Comics and Stories number 258, and that was in March of 1962. So I'll tell you, I remembered, you know, I was so excited to get into the Magica Dispel stories, but mostly to talk about the adventure length ones like the Midas Touch and the Unsafe Safe. There's only two of these 10 pagers that he did featuring her. And I faintly remembered this one. Mm-hmm. I figured to myself, well, you know, I'm only going to be featuring this as an episode because it is Valentine's themed. And so that kind of begs to be done. And then also because it features Magica, but I didn't think there was anything too much to write home about. And it's not like an all-time classic one, but I was really delighted when I was going through it to be like, oh yeah, this is actually a really fun story. This is really enjoyable, and it's kind of got a lot going for it. So it had a lot more to, I think there's more to say about it than I initially would have thought. So it has a pretty pedestrian opening. You know, this is Donald and the nephews greeting Uncle Scrooge, hat in hand, on Valentine's Day, asking if he's received any Valentines. And he is very, you know, unlikely asking what are Valentines. And Donald is, you know, just talking about the basic concept of greeting cards, but he points out on Scrooge's desk that it does in fact look like he's received something that looks like a Valentine that has some, quote, girlish writing. And he says, maybe you have a slick chick admirer. And immediately Scrooge opens it and he says, wow. John, do you want to read what he says here?
He says, wahoo, yahoo, a lacy card with perfume, yet whinny.
Yeah, and I'm imagining he's essentially making the horse noise there, which neither of us are going to try to do. It's very weird.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
And of course, perfume has historically been associated with prostitutes.
So, yeah. Well, yeah, I don't think it's meant to be coded this way other than the kind of the baggage that it's dragging along unavoidably. But this is a common Valentine's Day trope, right? Mm-hmm. This is very strange. We almost never see a characterization of Scrooge like this. It's pretty obvious that he's been hypnotized. You know, I recorded my next episode is going to be Oddball Odyssey, which is another Magica story where she's going to do basically the same thing. She's going to send him a hypnotic letter. So this is almost a dry run for that. I'll note really quickly that I think this is his very second story with Magica, almost an immediate follow-up to Midas Touch, which is pretty rare. He didn't really do a lot of continuity like that. All right, so Scrooge is immediately taken by this clearly hypnotic missive. I'm going to ask you, Suze, again to read Scrooge's bit of dialogue here on the second page.
Well, it starts with Scrooge taking a big sniff of the letter, the very perfumed letter, and he says, "Attar of Araby, essence of the mystic East, man-bait of fabled sirens from Circe to Bridget Barduck."
Okay, so that's a hoot, right? Yeah. First off, this is a great panel with Scrooge like floating along light as a feather. Again, a very weird characterization of Scrooge McDuck. I think you were looking up earlier what Attar of Araby is. Mm-hmm. Tell us about it.
It is some sort of, I couldn't find too much detail on it, but it is some perfume or kind of almost like, I think, like more like an essential oil. I found tea. Different kinds of teas made with something very similar. But, you know, I brought up the perfume being associated with prostitution because, you know, here he calls it man bait.
yeah. Man bait. And essence of the mystic East, right? It's exotic, like Magica Dispel is.
Well, and of course that part of the world was, especially at that time, was associated with the harem and the whole mystery of, you know, the Sultan and his harem of women. So, there's kind of a lot going on here with Scrooge.
Yeah, and a lot just in this panel, right? Again, I said this is a dry run for Oddball Odyssey, right? Here he's referencing Circe, who is going to make a sort of appearance in that one, to Bridget Barduck. That's, I'm sure you're picking up on the reference there.
Oh, of course, to Brigitte Bardot,
yeah. All right, so Scrooge is going to come back to Earth really quickly as he has Donald read him the verse in a dainty feminine hand. All right, I'll go ahead and read this part. Donald reads it with an expression of surprise, saying, "Prepare, McDuck, at once to part with what is dearest to your heart. The trove I come so far to seek is the first dime you e'er did eat. So for my Valentine, old son, I'm here to snaffle number one." Oh my God, I love it. I love Barks using terms like snaffle to take. And it is signed Magica Dispel Sorcerer. And we get this brief little recap moment where the ducks are all remembering her when she almost melted Scrooge's number one dime in Mount Vesuvius because she thinks it's going to bring her riches. So a little bit of whiplash here when he's going from like clearly besotted by this perfume to, you know, he's kind of snapped back to reality and he's just busily dreading her pursuit. And, you know, he reveals that old number one, as it's labeled, is locked in a safe, but he's concerned that she's going to hypnotize him and make him, you know, saying nothing can stop her. She's a sorceress. So, he's got the fact that it was mailed locally, indicating that she's here in town to worry about. On to the next page, the ducks are just going to discuss their best strategy here. And Donald comes up with what I would say is actually a pretty solid idea as far as these things go. He tells Scrooge to take another dime and just treat it like a dummy dime. He's going to age it up to look like old number one and use it as bait. And I really like this panel where the ducks are kind of laid around with some interesting looking tools, even a little mini anvil, it looks like, trying to turn it into, using what, sand, acid, and brimstone, they make a replica of old number one. And Scrooge mentions they even copied the bullet nicks and tomahawk dents. I like that a lot. It kind of conveys the history that this dime has.
I enjoyed that too. And I laughed to myself when I read this because I kept thinking, how did they have sand, acid, and brimstone lying around for convenient use? Yeah. Do they keep it in the kitchen?
There's your comic book logic. All right. So, you know, the plan is that when Magica comes here, he's going to tearfully part with the dummy dime and have Donald take it to his house and hide it somewhere very safe. And so the younger ducks wish Scrooge well and walk past an innocuous looking secretary and start, you know, as they walk down the street, they start talking. Donald starts talking a little bit too loudly about their task here, before a nephew points out that the sorceress could be listening in. All right, so, you know, we head back to Scrooge, and he's got that, he's got this posture that he always has before things go wrong when he thinks that he's, you know, managed to secure himself. He's kind of kicking back, feeling relieved, and then he happens to spy a concealed microphone that indicates that someone has, quote, been listening to my big gabbing mouth. I'll say, Suze, there's some really nice dialogue on this one. I really like Barks's writing in this story.
I like this too, and I liked some of these angles, like this one where he's down under the desk and kind of looking up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of change, you know, it kind of composed the frame really nicely, and he captured some nice detail on the desk, you know, and it, this sounds funny, but you know, the desk and the kind of big file cabinets kind of give this big office, you know, a kind of an interesting kind of sense of place, I think.
Yeah, I'll agree with you that it's some good art. It's like a, it's kind of a boring scene, right? Or it's a very like, just very matter of fact, right? Sure. We're just in an office. So what Barks is doing is he's kind of giving this just straightforward narration is he's using all these different angles, mm-hmm. To kind of break up the monotony of what could otherwise be a bit of a boring scene. And so he traces the wire, getting more nervous by the moment, and he finds that it meanders around to the desk.
Doesn't this feel like you're going to be, you know, you're being spied on in like a Russian hotel room?
Yeah, you know what? And honestly,
that's the point. It's this very kind of typical mid-century, you know, lots of file cabinets and this big clunky desk. But, you know, you find this little...
Right. The bug itself, right, looks kind of has that classic look. And I'll say this panel here, number 6 on this fourth page, it has the perspective that we are spying, mm-hmm. on him, I feel like. So yeah, I mean, I think we're supposed to feel kind of that sense of invasion of spying.
And one thing I love about this is that Scrooge's desk has a blotter on it. I haven't seen a blotter on a desk in so long. And what a great accessory.
Right.
Bring back the blotter.
Yeah. All right. So as he traces it to where that little old lady duck was, one of his clerks tells him that she just stepped out as he finds a speaker in the desk. And the clerk points out that her hanky sure reeks of perfume. And Scrooge, horrified, yells, "Attar of Araby." I really like that, you know, just is kind of a dramatic moment, right? Mm-hmm. The reveal of that scent.
So I did look up what an attar is, or an ittar. It is an essential oil, derived from a botanical or another natural source.
Nice, nice. All right. So he knows what is afoot here. He's got a, he's been listening to the ducks. She has been listening in on the ducks' plans. So Scrooge has to flee from his office and track down Donald and the ducks. And I like this transition. I like the view we get of the ducks walking along. We can see behind them. We can see that little old duck lady that we now know as the sorceress. So as they go into the park, we close in on her and we see her do one of her quick changes. This is definitely you've seen this in the two stories you read of her, but it definitely appears in quite a few where she'll change into various disguises. What do you think, Suze, of the disguise that she picks here?
I think it's so funny. She picks a disguise of almost like running shorts, and her hair is now blonde in this frame, and her hair is pulled back in a ponytail. I think she's trying to look like a female, you know, track star. But one of the things that makes me laugh is she says, "Move over, you weak-looking flabby duck. Give a strong, agile muscle girl running room."
Yeah. When I reread that, I cracked up at that because it is just so calculated. It's very funny. She is obviously baiting Donald. This is very mid-century or early 60s, right? Where like the male ego was probably even more fragile somehow than it is today. Like, not that this wouldn't work on a lot of dudes today, but it certainly would have worked on your average equivalent of Donald Duck in 1961 or two, whenever.
A flabby duck.
Yes. yeah. So, you know, she is teed off Donald perfectly. He says, "I like that. A scrawny crow calls me a weakling. Listen, you feeble female, you." Wow, isn't it amazing to just see this like unwashed sexism?
Absolutely. Like,
and it was so conventional and commonplace at the time.
But the nephews bring the truth here, and if they skip it, Uncle Donald.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they rarely lose their heads. Right. It's not going to happen in this story. You know, Donald is teed off, and he says he's going to run circles around that smarty just to teach her a lesson in manners.
Oh, those women, they need to learn their manners.
Yeah, boy. Yeah. So I like the nephews restraining him, you know, pointing out she's a stranger. Let her stay that way. I've got to read so much of his dialogue here between them. I'll beat you across the park, muscle woman. Pound your leather. I think that must mean, you know, keep running, right? Pound your leather shoes.
Sure.
So, you know, Magica bolts behind a tree, grabs her handbag, and just knocks him the heck out. It's great. Like, Magica is evil, but you almost can't help but root for her here.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Like, and the nephews, once again, they totally call it here. They say, "Uncle Donald goes through life with a chip on his shoulder. Someday he'll get his block knocked off." And quite frankly, he deserves it.
So, yeah.
See,
yeah.
Already it's happened.
Right.
You're like, thank you, Magica, for teaching this, you know.
But I love their posture. This one has some really nice character art here, as he says, "He's been frisked, the dime, it's gone." You know, so Magica, in the guise of the lady runner, is looking through his, you know, the contents of Donald's pockets to see if it's amongst the loot. But on the next page, we find that she is actually skunked. It wasn't in his purse, which of course refers to his coin purse. You know, that's an interesting little anachronism there, right? It wasn't in his pockets. Now we're going to start to see the rageful Magica come out. Another fan favorite aspect of the character. She spikes it down and yells, "Where is that dime?" And one of the clever nephews, as we transition back, has picked the dime out of Donald's pocket while he was struggling to race that girl. Such a great inversion of the child and adult roles, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. I love when we flash back to Magica and she's just in her hissing and snarling. Suze, this is just like a completely sexist retrograde depiction of a woman character. How would you describe this? The growling spitfire or whatever. But I cannot help but be incredibly entertained by it. It is so funny. All right, so Magica is going to, you know, she has also been hornswoggled. Is that our second use of the word hornswoggled in this story, or did I just read our youngest? I think I just read another Magica Dispel story where in Raven Mad, I think they used the term hornswoggled. What a great word. So she's going to encounter Scrooge running after Donald, and he's going to serve as a sort of punching bag or whipping boy for her as she foof bombs him, although it does say poof here.
I love how Barks draws her with high heels and kind of a big butt and white gloves or something.
I love how she kind of braces herself in those heels as she, you know, winds up for the foofing. Scrooge gets off a funny little line. Did another missile blow up on the launch pad as he's dazed? And the ducks are going to eventually head home to figure out where to hide the dime. And that's left to Donald, as the nephews are going to kind of go on off to their own things. One of them's going to grind some hamburger patties. One of them's going to bake a Valentine cake because they're hungry. And this is a weird moment here, right? They hear the doorbell ring, and it's Magica. Like, it is just Magica, not in any kind of disguise, just pretending that she's a perfume salesperson, offering Donald a free sample. And he remembers the sorceress. Like, this is weird. This is Barks wasn't much one for continuity, but she really should have had a disguise here, don't you think?
Absolutely. And you're supposed to think that Attar of Araby is just going to basically wipe his memory and all of his judgment, but yet that he would maintain enough of his faculties to hand over the dime.
Yeah, like he my read on this, even though he doesn't make it explicit, is the Attar of Araby is you know, spiked with some hypnotic potion of hers, that it's not just doing it by itself, but regardless, like, he has to lean in to smell it first. So, you know, that is a sour note in this. I do love his little fainting character art there as he thuds. It's a great expression. But he is in Magica's power now, and she's going to demand the location of the dime. And now we're just going to have kind of this, like, you know, game of hide the dime, right? The nephews are working in the kitchen. We get to see an old-fashioned meat grinder there. I guess it's not that old-fashioned. It's just it's not really a home appliance these days.
No, but you can still purchase one.
Yeah, I guess we could get the attachment for your stand mixer that lets you do this.
Absolutely.
Huh? So I like this exchange. Magica says, so I must deal with children. Which one of you is Dewey? And they just point to each other, all saying he is. And they kind of play keep away with it, and they use some kitchen stuff to avoid her foofing. Interesting here. Now it says foof when it said poof on the previous page. And we've got a nice little standoff here where she's prepping to jolt you brats out of your feathers with her giant foof bomb. And he, one of the nephews, is dangling the precious old dime above the meat grinder. All right, so rounding down to the closing of the story, Scrooge arrives. He sees his dazed Donald, and fearing the worst, he runs in, pokes at Magica with his cane, saying to drop your weapons, you witch. And she does with a mighty foof. And tragically, the dime goes through the grinder, finishing old number one, leaving Magica dispel to slink back to her shack on Vesuvius, and Uncle Scrooge flattened by grief. And Suze, do you want to kind of take it home and tell us how it ends?
Well, it turns out that old number one did not go through the grinder. It actually was it went into the cake batter, and the nephews baked the cake, and they served a piece of it to Scrooge, and he bites down on the piece, he bites down on the cake and finds old number one in the piece of cake, and he's so happy, and it's just a nice resolution, very silly.
and we've got a fun little comic beat at the end where they're, you know, explaining it to their uncle. And one of them points out, we'll have to explain everything again to Uncle Donald because he's still sniffing Attar of Araby. It's the third mention, I believe, of it. So it kind of, you know, gives it that comic rhythm and that comic cadence. It's not maybe the best closer there, but it's a very worthwhile ending. So that's it. That's 10 Cent Valentine. That is one of the two Magica 10 pagers, if I remember right. I really liked this, actually. I this was a nice surprise. I did remember it once I started reading it, but I thought it was a very worthwhile like story, and I found it very enjoyable. What were your thoughts?
I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, Donald is such an oaf. and I have to admit that I do enjoy seeing him get bested every once in a while.
Right, right. What did you think of this relative to her first appearance in The Midas Touch?
Well, one thing that I enjoy in The Midas Touch are the great scenes on Vesuvius. So, you know, this one didn't have quite that great sense of adventure.
Yeah.
But the character design is a lot of fun, and the whole scene where they're, you know, chasing kind of through the park is a lot of fun too.
Yeah, that was a riot.
That's pretty bold.
Excellent. So let's see. That's our wrap up really quickly. This, I like to check in on Index. You know, this story got a rating of 7.2 out of 10, which is good for 983 currently out of all 43,000 some Disney comics that are rated by users on Index. So, you know, it's not like a well-loved story by Barks fans. It's in the top 1,000 as most 10 pagers would be. I actually think that might, you know, be a little unfair to it. I thought this was pretty good. I thought this was a very fun story and I really liked it. Excellent. Well, Suze, I really appreciate you joining me for this. I will look forward to, you know, the release date of this is going to be our Valentine's Day. So happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks, babe. Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Excellent. And thank you, listeners, for enjoying this episode. And listen up for more episodes of the 10-Page Podcast and regular episodes covering the adventure stories as well. You can check us out on Facebook and Instagram sometimes, Barks Remarks, and happy Valentine's Day to all of you.